What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Van Chats. My name is John Kroom. If you haven't already, please make sure you hit that subscribe button, leave us a review. It really helps us out a lot. And I just want to go ahead and give a huge shout out to everybody that came up to me this weekend at Southeast Gravel here in South Carolina, letting me know that they listen to the podcast, that they really enjoy the podcast. It was amazing. So if you were one of those people, Tim Coffey, one of those guys who came up to me and said you liked the podcast, thank you so much. It really means the world. If you haven't already, please make sure that you go check out our new coffee mugs, our socks that we've just released with Defeat. And you can do that by going to johnkroomcycling.com or coffeeandvanchatspodcast.com and click on gear. And you can order that today. If you want, just shoot me an email at info@johnkroomcycling.com. And we can put together a package for you. So go ahead and do that, and that'd be great. Yeah, we'd really appreciate that. But anyways, let's go ahead and dive into this week's episode with Zach White. Zach White is a mountaineer. He's an ultra runner. He's done triathlons, I believe. I mean, he's kind of done it all. But this man is gearing to hike Everest in 2022. And I remember coming across this guy and thinking, there's no way, Zach on Everest on Instagram. And yeah, supposedly this is a thing. You hire, I guess, some Sherpas or some people to go with you and mountain guides to climb Everest with you. And so he walks us through how he's training for that, why he wants to do that, and how long he's been prepping for that. And it kind of just makes you believe that there's no limit to really anything in life. So I'll just quit talking. Let's go ahead and dive into this inspiring podcast. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. This episode is also brought to you by Spot. Guys, you've heard me talk about this over and over and over again. And events are coming back. We've just heard that, you know, everybody's hopefully going to be vaccinated here in May, or at least have the opportunity to be vaccinated. So that means events are probably on their way back. And that is going to mean that you want Spot, because in the event of an injury, you're going to want Spot on your side to make sure you can cover those lofty medical bills if anything crazy happens. Spot covers up to $20,000 per injury. And they recently just partnered with USA Cycling. So those members can go over to their site right now and be covered by Spot today. So all you have to do is go check out the link in the description below or go to kroom.getspot.com. That's kroom.getspot.com. What are you waiting for? Get covered today so you can go out and do those crazy adventures without any stress or any worries. That's kroom.getspot.com. This episode is also brought to you by Bike Hardcore. Guys, we've had this conversation and gravel season's kicking in, and I know you guys are getting your bikes extra dirty, especially with all this March madness of rain and spring weather. So be sure to check out bikehardcore.com to get all your bike cleaning goodies that you might need and to keep your machine running well and smooth. All you have to do is go to bikehardcore.com, or you can check out the link in the description below and get 15% off using code Kroom at checkout. That's 15% off your first order using code Kroom at checkout. All you have to do is go to bikehardcore.com, and yeah, you can have a clean bike pretty much all season. So go check them out at bikehardcore.com. This episode is brought to you by chamois butter. Guys, if you haven't already and you've been riding a bike without chamois cream, I do not know what you're doing. It's honestly what helps me get through these super long rides, like this race this past weekend where I'm just pretty much pegged on the nose of the saddle for the entire race. I am a huge fan of the Euro style chamois butter. So all you have to do is go check them out at chamoisbutter.com. That's chamoisbutter.com. Or you can shoot me an email at info@johnkroomcycling, and I'll even send you out a sample pack so you can try it for yourself. And I promise you, it's something that you'll never ride without again. So check them out at chamoisbutter.com or shoot me an email at info@johnkroomcycling.com. This episode is also brought to you by Panaracer. I was lucky enough to use the Panaracer Gravel King this past weekend at the Southeast Gravel Race in Clinton, South Carolina, and I'm a huge fan of it. I use their Classic Gravel King, which is about a slick tread, and I use their 700x38C, and this course was set up around 50% gravel, 50% road, and that had me feeling pretty comfortable and pretty confident in the turns with gravel and loose sand, but then super, super fast on all the road sections that I had to offer during this course. And yeah, they offer all kinds of tires in the Gravel King. So all you have to do is go check them out at Panaracer.com and select the Gravel King that you might think fits you the best. So that's Panaracer.com. That's Panaracer.com. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Van Chats. I'm sitting here with Zach White, other words known as Zachary White, or known as Zach on Everest. I came across this guy's Instagram and read his bio, and sure enough, I read it right. This man is trying to climb Everest in 2022. So we're going to dive a little bit into that. But anyways, Zach, how are you, man? Where are you at right now and what's going on?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, John. My name is Zachary White. I technically live in New York City, but I spend about half my time in the Pacific Northwest. Right now I'm in Seattle, Washington, living with a couple buddies. I'm out here for 2 months and just training to climb Denali this year, which is the highest point in North America. And then obviously that kind of leads into the bigger climb of Everest next year. So planning on full-time moving to Washington State in August.
Man, that's insane. So what triggered that? Like, where do you come from? Like, what idea, like, how does that even come to the forefront of your brain?
Yeah. So I think, what was it, in 2016, if you scroll all the way to the first post on Instagram, literally it's me like deciding that I want to climb Everest, having almost no experience in mountaineering, never really run that much, never been like super outdoor. Like I grew up in the outdoors, but never really spent that much time like really invested in it. And I think 2015, 2016, I saw some people climbing it. There's some really cool photos and it just really piqued my interest. And I was like, hey, if there's people doing that, like I can figure out a way to do it. I can figure out what they did, work all the way backwards and where they started, because you have to start somewhere, and I could do that too. And I think my mindset is usually setting big goals, breaking them down and figuring out how to achieve them. So Everest is like that North Star that I have right now and have had for the last 5 or 6 years, but it's stemmed and created a bunch of different avenues for running, triathlon, things like that. So that's kind of where it started, and we can talk about more about how it branched off.
Yeah. Well, how did it branch off? Like, I mean, like, cause it looks like you've kind of done it all. Whether that's ultra running or triathlon. So like, how did you, what were the reasonings behind that and kind of what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So when I initially set that North Star, like, okay, I'm going to climb Everest, I started doing a bunch of research, and they meaning like people that were just writing forums of have climbed Everest or saw or interviewed other people that have climbed Everest. They said, if you are a marathon runner, you tend to do better at high altitude and in mountaineering, because the way that you mountaineer is long, slow days in the back country. And by being a marathon runner, you understand how your body takes in nutrition, how you exercise, how you recover, and all of that feeds into being a successful mountaineer. And from the beginning, I was like, okay, well, I think I've done one 5K. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to look in over the next year, I'm going to figure out how to run a marathon. And looking back, that it's like, it's crazy to me, like starting from literally square one to running a marathon to then going on running like 100 miles or 100 plus. So that's where like the running came into it. And over that course of 1 year, I really fell in love with mountaineering, because of the running aspect of it. Like the cardio just gave me tons of energy. I was always in really good mood because I was getting more endorphins. I was eating more and I was just enjoying life in general. So running eventually stemmed into like trail running and running uphill, not just road running. So I got into trail running, which I started doing. Like my first marathon was a trail marathon. So I did 26 miles out on like a trail. It took me a while to do it, but I just fell in love. It was during a snowstorm, actually. So right after a snowstorm. So I was running on trails that were just covered in snow. And it was like, I was running in the backcountry, like Narnia. And it just like excited me to no end. So then over the next couple of years, I just started running more and more. And then I eventually did a marathon in New York, and it wasn't like the New York Marathon, but it was just one in the Hamptons. And after that marathon, I was like, hey, I could probably keep running. And I know there's one gentleman who I became friends with a few years ago that talked to me about, after running his first marathon, the progression he went into running the Moab 240, which is like the 240-mile ultramarathon. It's like one of the longest.
That's the Mecca. That's like the Mecca ultramarathon, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's the one that takes like 4 days. Some people can do it in like 2.5 days, which is absolutely crazy. But you usually like sleep a little bit during it because it's so long. But he told me about it and my jaw just dropped. But it planted this little seed in the back of my head. And I was like, over the next couple of years of training, I was like, there's somebody that's running 240 miles. Like, why couldn't I do that?
Yeah.
So that branched into there. But I'll pause there. Do you have any questions?
No, man. That's awesome. Like, that's...
I could go on and on.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's perfect. And so, like, is anybody going to do this with you?
The Everest trip?
Yeah.
Yeah. So... cool story. I've been planning to do Everest for a while, and I ended up meeting this guy when I was running the Moab 240. I think we ran like 15 or 20 miles together, and he was a mountaineer, and I think he does like training for the government or the military, and his name's Jason. But we talked a little bit about like, oh, someday maybe we'll do Everest. And then immediately after that race, like, we were messaging each other, we're like, all right, let's find some outfitters to get us up the mountain, some guides, and then let's get this ball rolling. So we found a guided group, and so him and I are going to do it. And then there's another guy named James, who's out of, I think, somewhere in Canada, but we're all going to do it together. So luckily we'll be under like supervision of a guide who can show us the mountain. And I think you're required to have a guide as well as like a Sherpa guide as well, just to support the local economy. But
I was about to say, like, how many people have actually done this in full?
I don't know the number off the top of my head.
Is it small, or is it more than I think?
It's probably a few thousand.
Okay.
I'll look it up actually right now, because the number isn't like, it's not that big, but there's plenty of people have done it, and there's a good infrastructure to do it. Some people tend to think it's like, it's pretty easy because there's a lot of fixed lines. But the, like, from an actual like climbing standpoint, it's not super technical. So like, I won't have like crazy ice axes and like going up a waterfall. It'll be like a pretty standard route that's been repeated over a few times. But I'm hoping getting into mountaineering in this way is like, I'm self-training a lot of the background knowledge that it takes to go up and climb it. Like, in my mind, I want to see how far I could take myself if I was doing it on my own. Just in the back of my head, not really, but saying like, okay, do I know all of the steps to get me up to the top and get me back safely? And what don't I know, so that I can learn from the guys that I'm with, so that later on I could do some more, like, even more intense climbs.
Yeah. So that all being said too, like, is like, because if they have guides and things out there anyway, I mean, there has to be like people that have done it maybe twice, three, four times, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think the people who hold the biggest record for it, probably around like 15 times maybe, are the local Sherpas, because they're the powerhouse. They're superhuman athletes that live up in high altitudes, and like, whatever work I'll be doing, there's probably a Sherpa that's doing three times the amount of work just to get me to the summit. Which is crazy to think about, because it's like, I put in all this training, all this effort, and you have like these local people that they just live and breathe the mountains, and they're hauling tons of weight, tons of gear. And it's just really incredible.
How long are you expecting this to take you?
Yeah. So I just requested off the time for work. I'm a business consultant. I travel usually, but I'm going to take about 2 months off.
Okay. So two months off.
Yeah.
So it's not even like, yeah, because I was wondering when you were like, I just asked for the time off work. I thought you were going to tell me that you just put your 2 weeks in.
True.
And like, that's the, because like, I'm trying to think of like how this would happen. But yeah, so I kind of want to go back to the Moab 240.
Yeah.
Do you have any crazy stories from the Moab 240, or any crazy experiences from that event?
Yeah. So, I, like, that's by far one of my favorite events that I've done. I had my My parents actually came, and then I had a group of, I think, four friends, like some of my closest friends that were there helping me through the whole thing. And they were like the support crew. They're like the, at a pit stop, like they help you and make sure you have everything you need. But so shout out to them, but like some crazy experiences were, after the third day on like one of the final days, like I started hallucinating, and before I ran it, I was like, okay, so people are saying they're hallucinating. It can't be true. But yeah, after that little sleep, I think I slept 4 or 5 hours over the course of 4 days. Like my brain was just filling in all the gaps with like, so it didn't have to process things. And it was like creating these like crazy visuals where like trees would look like faces, like cartoon faces. And this happened for like a couple hours. I had to sit down and like actually like sleep, because it was kind of freaking me out. And then let's see, other crazy experiences. Oh, I was in the middle of the woods, probably 2 a.m., one of the coldest nights, one of the highest points in the course, which I think was 9,000 feet. But my partner and I, we bumped into this guy who I think was a little bit lost. He had hit his head and he had like been going in circles and he didn't know where he was. But we met up with him, and then about 10 minutes later, we just shined our headlamps out into like the forest, and we just see like two or three set glowing eyes. And like, this is territory, like cougar territory. It was in Utah. And we were just so freaked out because I was exhausted. So I'm like, I don't really know if it's there. I confirmed with my partner, like, that he was like, yeah, this is really happening. And then we hauled as fast as we could out, like clicking our sticks, like our walking sticks together to make noise to like let them know we're there, not try to startle them. But then like we went probably half a mile, we looked back and there was, the eyes were still there. So like whatever it was following us, and freaked us out because there was a cougar attack literally the day before, or like the day after, or there was a video where this guy was filming and he was like backing up. There's a cougar trying to come at him.
So that was the same time. I was going to say, I've seen that video.
Like literally the same time. And like, is the same, like, same area, maybe not same area, but somewhere in that.
Well, that's insane. Yeah. I was about to say, man, was that you on that video? But I guess it was at night. So
yeah,
man, I don't know how I would handle that for sure. So are you like being coached by anyone, or like, are you just free balling this?
Just kind of free balling it. What I love about it is that I love what I'm doing. So I haven't really, I don't know. Like I just don't feel the need to get a coach right now. I'm on my own time. I do what I love. I just go out and complete it. And a lot of times it's more about like finishing and trying to finish, like maybe like my goal is always like top 20% of whatever I'm doing, whether it's like Ironman or trail running, ultra running, things like that. I try to be like in the top 20% where I'm like fast and efficient and I've got things dialed in, but not necessarily like I need to be number one all the time. Cause I think that that mindset for me takes away a little bit of the experience, because I want to be able to sit there and enjoy it and take everything in. And I've found that if I try to go to be number one, like that can reduce the experience for me.
For sure. So let's talk a little bit about your goal this year. What mountain is it that you're hiking up or climbing up? Denali?
Yeah.
Okay. So where's that located, and kind of how long is that going to take you, and what are you doing to prep for it?
Yeah. So Denali is one of those other dreams that's kind of been like a couple years in the making. It is the highest point in North America, up in Alaska. You fly into Anchorage, you take a bus about 3 hours, and then you actually like fly onto the glacier, out of the mountain. And we were supposed to do it last year, and we had all of the logistics, like hundreds of hours of logistics, just planning, meeting with teams. And COVID obviously came in and they just nixed the entire season. So we didn't end up going, and that was pretty unfortunate. But this year I've been able to go back, look at my itinerary and actually refine it. So I think I've been planning this for at least 2 years. Yeah. And I'm getting almost sick of like planning for the mountain. And I'm like, I just want it to happen. But so I have a climbing partner, and he and I have done a couple pretty big summit days, like 30 miles and like 10,000 feet of elevation on glacier, which usually takes a long time to travel. And we've really dialed in our system and our work, like we work well together. And I think that's like one of the biggest aspects of a huge climb like Denali, is that you have to find a partner that you work really well together with. So we've been refining the itinerary, trying to get it down, and trying to get it down in like under 7 days. The hard thing is that once you start going up in elevation, you start really pushing the limits of acclimatization. So it's not only like you're going up 10,000 feet, 20,000 feet to the summit. It's like there's all of these other things that come into play. And one of them is altitude. So if you go up too fast and you aren't acclimatized, you can get what they call cerebral edema or pulmonary edema, which is when either your brain swells up with fluid and like you can't walk straight, or your lungs fill up with liquid and you essentially like drowned in your own lungs. So like, it's not only how far you can push your body, it's like how much the elements are willing to like let you go up.
Allow you to do that. Yeah.
So with proper acclimatization, which is usually you go up and you come back down a little, you go up, come back down a little. The normal time frame is like 2 to 3 weeks without considering weather, which can sometimes pin you down for 7 days.
So. Yeah. So like I was just thinking about this while you were talking about it, but I remember when you went back, you pretty much said you had no experience in mountaineering. So how the fuck did you learn all this? It's one thing for me to like, yeah, when I got into cycling, I just kind of like learned as I went. Even ultra running, like I'll give you that. It's like you kind of learn as you go, but like you could die if you don't read the elements right. Like, or if you don't, like just like you just said, like, oh yeah, you go up and then come back down. Nobody would ever really just think of that. Like if that was on a test, I would have failed that part of the test.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's a great question. And it honestly was really, it was hard to get into it. So I had the idea to climb Everest in like 2016 or 2015-ish. And then.
So 6 years ago.
Yeah. 6 years ago. And I think the word that comes to my mind of like how you get into it is through mentorship and self research and self reliance. So like I started just looking on every forum that I could find, like Reddit, just people's blogs that had climbed once or twice, or like full on mountaineers, looking on like guided websites of what their itineraries look like and what they do. And a lot of the resources pointed back to this book called The Freedom of the Hills, which is, if you had a textbook for mountaineering, that's exactly what it is. It is like all of the basics. And I would sit there during my lunches at work, and I would just try to read through as much as I could. And eventually I was like cover to cover, had finished it. And it gave me like a ton of fundamental knowledge about mountaineering, but the only way I could apply that is if I actually like had a group of people I could go with, or like one solid mentor that could really show you the ropes, like figuratively and literally. So I joined this club when I lived in Eastern Washington back in 2017 for about a year. And there was a club called it was called IMAC, like Intermountain Alpine Club. And it was just a bunch of people who had been mountaineering for 5 or 10 years, and they got together, they wanted more climbing partners. So they created this club, and literally like they had a 10-week course that was free. Every Tuesday you would go and you'd hang out with a bunch of people. They would literally walk through like a curriculum and teach you all the basics, all the knots, all the rope techniques, how to acclimatize correctly, just everything you'd need to know from a fundamental level. And then at the end of that, there was a actual climb on Mount Hood in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So we did that. And after that, you kind of like have learned the basics where you could be safe in the mountains. But then you kind of have to take it the next level of like finding someone who's a little bit more skilled than you, so that they can navigate all the things that you would never even think about. Like where to be, like what is the avalanche terrain look like, where there's like high risk of like rock fall, things like that, where you might not consider unless you've been in the mountains for a while.
Wow, dude, that's like, yeah, that's just epic to think about. Cause you know, especially with COVID, like everybody's upset with COVID cause they've worked so hard to train for something this year. You know what I mean? And so like to think that you've been doing this for 6 years, training for one thing in theory, and to just stay on top of it is pretty wild to me.
Yeah, thanks.
It's insane. It's actually kind of inspirational. So, yeah, man, I respect it a ton. So after Everest, what's next for Zach? I mean, like, you've literally climbed Everest at that point. Is it just something that you're going to have to take day by day?
Yeah, I think that's another good question. And I usually tend to look out like 5 or 6 years in advance of like where I want to be.
Obviously, look at you right now. Yeah.
Career or whether it's mountains. And I can't really see past that other than the fact that I know I want to keep climbing. I know I want to keep like pushing the limits and the boundaries. Although I do have this phrase that's like fast, light, and safe. Because there's a lot of people that go fast and light, and it you can get a lot of dangerous. You can bring in an element of danger that's like unnecessary. But I think after this, I don't know. I'll probably want to do like I think the next step is usually like the 7 summits of the 7 highest peaks, different continents. But I think that's something that a lot of people strive for. And I think I want to kind of mold my own like style and see what I want to do after that.
Man, I feel like you could make a docuseries on all this stuff, and it would be really cool, and it'd be a good watch, and or like even like the Appalachian Trail or something these lines. It would just be epic. I don't know. Have you heard of Cody Townsend?
Yeah, not even kidding. I just watched a video right before we talked about Cody Townsend summiting Denali and then skiing off.
Sweet. He's been on the podcast.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. Super, super cool guy. And yeah, I honestly think you guys would get on very well if you ever reached out to him. He's a really cool dude. But that kind of leads into my last question, which we ask everybody that comes on this podcast. And I don't think I've prepped you for this. Sometimes I prep people, sometimes I don't. And either way it works out. But the question is if you could have one cup of coffee with one individual dead or alive, who would that individual be and why? And how would you take your coffee?
Yeah, I would probably take it black.
Okay.
And then I'm gonna have to think about who that is. I don't know. I would love to have just a cup of coffee with my friends. I try not to look up to people too much, to sit, be like fan over them too much.
But
I think there's sometimes like you want to aspire to be somebody, and you can take certain elements from that person. But I'm really, really invested in just like having good times with friends, and whether that's mountaineering or just like sitting back on the back porch and drinking some coffee. Like that's my thing.
Dude, that's awesome, man. Well, guys, if you haven't already, please go check out Zach's Instagram at Zach on Everest. He's also got this GoFundMe. Are you still using this?
I still have it. I launched it during COVID, and if someone wants to donate to my cause, that's great. But I also realize like it's not always the best timing to ask people for money during COVID. I know,
I'm going to push it, man. I want you guys to go donate to Zach's Mount Everest fundraiser in 2022. I'm going to put a description or a link in the description below. I think you should be pushing this more too. It's a cool thing that you're doing, man. And yeah, people are getting let go of jobs, but also people are having to stay home and not spend money. And maybe they want to put their money towards this, like seeing somebody go do Everest. Like that's amazing. So, guys, go check that out. It's going to be a link in the description below, as well as his social media. Give him a follow. And but other than that, guys, we'll see you next time. Thanks for watching.
Thanks for having me on, John.
Cheers.
Cheers.